This is the Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. This is the second interview with Herbert Liang, taking place on February 2nd, 1981, in his office. Okay. What were you saying about before the war? The occupations that...
Before World War II, many of the Chinese well, of course, Chinese population in Los Angeles was very limited to certain specific areas, and being aware of the three major areas at that time, the 9th and San Pedro area, the 20th and San Pedro area, and the Chinatown area. Most of the Chinese that we were, our peers at that time, weren't looking to go into fields rather than the careers which were available after high school. And some of us did go to college, but we had to usually work along with our education because of the expenses. We weren't looking, many of us weren't looking to anything above 4 years of college because of the bias or whatever, the opportunities were limited to over the Chinese, as well as Japanese, because of even down our street where we were about the only family, Japanese weren't looking to anything but working in markets like such as fruit stands, the wholesale produce market, or other similar types of employment. Japanese was actually someone in the gardening and working in service stations, or employment where they were higher professional levels, unless a person went to college to become a doctor or a dentist. Because even so the opportunities were really limited. Even the women, knowing the women in those days, my sister and some of her peers, many of them worked in restaurants, and some went to work as clerical and sales persons in some of the department stores, and those were limited. But of course, they even had sewing factories in those days. So some of them went to that kind of line, but some went to work in houses as maids. Some of the Chinese women went in those. The census report even indicated back in 1970 that the Chinese women had a lower average income than the black sisters. So this kind of shows that even with the three decades of passed beyond 1940 or World War II, two and a half, 3 decades, that the Chinese women hadn't progressed as much as the others, the other groups, women. So we weren't looking to too much for opportunities, because Japanese, even in our street, who were engineers, graduated from UCLA at that time, were unable to find employment because of discrimination. There were Chinese working as in the field, because I can't think of the names, but there were a few people who were working as engineers, very limited, and there were people in business, in like insurance and other fields, but as far as going out working for somebody in private industry or civil service was very limited. There's a lot of job bias.
Mm-hmm. You think that, I would think that the Chinese women in general had a better education than the black sisters, their sisters, so why would the blacks get more money than the Chinese?
Well, I think perhaps whether the census figures are wrong in 1970, this is what we, you know, had received in some of the statistics. But don't forget, in the 70s, 60s, many of the other ethnic minorities were pulled up higher, you know, into the different areas because of the civil rights. And also, even historically, there are more blacks into teaching than there are Chinese. In fact, my wife was, when she was in San Diego in about 1950, at that time, about 40, late 40s, going to college, they advised her not to go to teaching because in San Diego, they said, well, they probably won't hire a Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
So, even, you know, this is something that is a reality.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You mentioned last time that after your father passed away, your family still had the market for a few years. Who was in charge of the market at that time?
Well, my oldest brother being too young, he's still in high school, and my uncles, who were several of them, were running the business. Now, I'm not too familiar with it because I was just a young tyke at that time, but from what I understand from the family, they were the ones who were running it. Of course, my mother, not even being able to articulate outside of the house because of her limit in, you know, the fact that she was a non-English speaker, in essence, and didn't know business, even the first thing about any kind of business dealings or even running a business, was precluded from even being involved. And my brother, being the youngster that he was, that I guess the uncles were able to also shut him out from the business.
Mm. So how many uncles?
Oh, I had several.
Several, mm-hmm.
They're actually my father's younger brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can't make this kind of, you know, statement because not knowing, but just from what I hear, that, you know, the business didn't seem to be moving, or be economic and feasible to hold on to. I think that's why the family got rid of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, with your uncles running it, then at that time, you had to share the money amongst different families. I mean, you know, your family and then your uncle's family and his kids and the others. And I guess it would have to spread it out a lot farther.
Well, I'm not aware of, you know, of the business aspect because I know that, you know, just what I hear.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's unfortunate or not, because as I indicated last time, my father was probably one of the founders of the market, because back as far back as 1910, which only several years after the founding of the market, he was the secretary of the market association. So whether all these things which occurred after World War II, like some of the other business, the produce houses who have been large because of the sale by, you know, the Japanese leaving and so forth. Mm-hmm. Knowing my father, as aggressive as he was, he probably would have enlarged too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Last time you mentioned that 1970-71 you were director of a project. What project was that?
Oh, 1970-71, I was the director of a project called KEYS, K-E-Y-S, and it's an acronym for Knowledge of English Yield Success. And this project was formed because of the need, we saw the need for English language acquisition to become successful in the school. So what our project did was actually, the funding which was requested was to go into, in the beginning, the year before, we had a plan for a project from kindergarten through high school, but the state saw they didn't have the large amount of money, so they didn't accept it. They suggested that we cut it down, so we cut it down to elementary, and after negotiating with the state the following year, we finally went to the early young learner, and then we end up taking care of the actual having classes for preschool children who came from families who, you know, that, who were non-English speaking or limited English speaking. And that, and the materials that we were beginning to develop covered elementary grades, would be usable, but the actual project participation in the education of the youngster was in preschool. And our program covered five schools at the in the beginning, in Carson and Gardena, down Chinatown. We had we had one by City College. There was one other, Solano Avenue. That was by Dodger Stadium. So that's, those were the five schools. And the second year, just before I left, we wrote up a new proposal, continuing proposal. We added on several other schools, two schools with Korean children. And since that time, of course, it's enlarged, and the scope has become wider, and the more material has been developed, and the teacher's been in service, packet's been developed. I think we, right behind you, you see that, that red and gold, that's the keys kit, right?
Oh, yes.
So there's materials that's been developed, and there's little booklets and so forth, teacher information, activities and such. But the premise is that we would help the children learn English by using their familiar environment, like culture and so forth. So there are cultural materials in Chinese, Japanese, Korean, and Samoan, and Filipino. And using the both languages, if possible, we hired educational aides speaking of some of the primary languages. Of course, there were a few times that we couldn't match because you have about three, four different languages in one class.
Mm-hmm.
We found this, that the children, when they came in, may have tested what they call Stainine 2. That means the Stainine is a 9 level, 9 being the highest, a Stainine 4 and 5 being average. So their Stainine 2, they're way below average, maybe about at the bottom of that grade level, about the bottom 20%. Then after they finished the program, toward the end, and from May, they were retested, found the average was Stainine 6, which is above average.
What is Stainine?
Well, it's a group of 9.
Oh.
Like, you know, IQs, you know, or achievement levels. 9 being the highest, anywhere from, like, you know, its IQ is 129 and above. So it's kind of a level about every 12 points. So you get down to about Stainine 4 and 5 in intelligence test. You need the index between 89 and 112 around there.
Mm-hmm.
Around there. So that means if a person scores Stainine 4 and 5, they're about average learner in achievement testing. So 6 is above average. So the kids are doing pretty well in our program. So it's been fun. Since I've been the first director, it's been funded. It's still in existence, so the program is doing well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Last time you mentioned that you started work as a teacher. You worked for 118th School?
118th Street School.
118th Street
down
School.
Down in the South area.
Right. Do you have the years when you worked there?
Oh, this is approximate 1951 to 52.
51 to 52.
And then I went to a school called Holmes Avenue from about 50 the following year for about 5 years. H-O-L-M-E-S.
H-O-L-M-E-S. From about 52 to 57?
58 plus 58. And from 59 I went to Ivanhoe to 64, I think. 64. I took up sabbatical and I came back. I worked as a counselor. From about 65 to 70, roughly.
Uh-huh.
And I went to the Keys Project for 1 year, and I came here. I've been here since.
What kind of counseling?
Oh, everything.
In a school? Uh-huh. School counseling?
No, I was a pupil service counselor. I kind of went to the homes council. And went to the counseling in the school. I had group counseling, individual counseling, they all called and such.
Uh-huh. Okay. You were a member of the Chinese club at Jefferson High School.
Well, that's
right?
Way back.
You told me about that. What did you think of that Chinese club?
Well, mostly it was kind of getting, it's more of a socially oriented organization in those days. It was, we got together and talked about some issues and problems, and then we also planned activities together. Like, you know, to, in those days, it was very difficult to go from one place to the other because it was limited. Economically, we weren't as, I guess, well off as people are today, young kids, and everybody's driving cars, but we had to carpool it to go to houses to have, what do you call these, they call them record hops. So these are the things that we used to do, and sometimes we'd go to get together and go bowling. We'd have maybe a picnic, things like that, but the meetings were of that type to get the people together, to know each other.
And it was only for Chinese.
Right, it's called the Chinese Student Club.
Mm-hmm.
Or Chinese Club, whatever it was called. And they had the Japanese Club at that Jefferson High School at that time.
Did anybody have any Caucasian girlfriends or boyfriends, and would they be welcome in the club? Or? Do you remember any, or was it all Chinese?
It was all, our club was all Chinese, I recall. I can't remember. The only person who was non-Chinese was the advisor, the teacher. And she was, you know, come to think, we had a reunion. I don't know if you heard about the reunion.
No.
We had a reunion several times. That was 5 years ago, was the last one. They had three reunions, and then they had the last one was the biggest one. We had about 400 people who went to school back in those days. Actually, it was supposed to be the Jefferson alumni, and it fanned out to be the Poly High School. The next thing became all the Chinese who went to school about that time. So we had people I hadn't seen for 20, 25 years, 30 years even.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite a job to put it together. That's why they stopped doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought they were going to have another one pretty soon because it was 5 years since. But
mm-hmm.
maybe I'll talk to these people. But I think it's good to, you know, because of the fact it brings back a lot of people also to also a lot of things which you brought up that it brings back that to mind that you forget. There's a lot of things are brought out by the SMC up there, which about people, what they're doing then and now, and then then things begin to get a picture of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Last time you mentioned that you had faced some kind of bias or discrimination in the service. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, it wasn't overt, but we heard it from some of the officers, and I told you I was an officer in the last war. I was a pilot, went over to China, Burma, India. We asked for China, Burma, India theater because of the fact that our crew was all Chinese. The officers are all Chinese, and the other three on the bomber were Caucasian enlisted men. We all were very close. We worked together. We flew together. We went to New York City together, and you know, on the weekends sometimes. And then we were signed overseas, went to India, Burma Theater, and when we got there, one of the first things we found was a commanding officer, who was a major at that time, told them that I guess he saw the names, you know, we had one person with a Chinese name on it,
mm-hmm.
The late Kim Fu Lee, he passed away about over 5 years ago, but he must have seen the name. And I don't know, Leong could have sounded, Herbert Leong might sound Chinese, but the other one, Stanley Lee. Of course, you might say Lee could be Chinese, could be white too. But anyway, so I guess he found some way that there are three, he told some of these officers who were not as, I guess, didn't have that much prejudice in their mind, that there were three brown bodies coming. That's what he called us. That's what he told us at that time. Maybe he said something else, but that he didn't like it. And we were wondering why, because when we got there, he didn't even welcome us. You know, usually when new people come in, new officers come in, the commanding officer is there to welcome. He had one of his administrative assistants, we would call him adjutant or whatever, to welcome us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, but we didn't know at that time, you know, and then we didn't know who the commanding officer was. We didn't find out. In fact, I never officially met him. This is the truth. Saw him in an officer's club at night. We were drinking, and he was over there, and he never said hello to me or the others. And like I say, this is, you know, this is not even so, it's pretty overt. I mean, he never said anything to us to the effect but that he didn't like us, but, you know, it's no respect for the other individual or even recognizing or just giving the time of day or the greetings for to say hello.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's pretty obvious. But and then later on, I mean, about the first week somebody told us what the commanding officer had said.
Mm-hmm.
And never, you know, very seldom we see him, but, you know, he wasn't open to us. So it's kind of, I guess it's pretty obvious, you know, bias or if you want to call it bias. He just is ignoring us. Is you know, some people you just don't care. They even say hello to you because you don't want to know them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, you know, there was more feeling or meaning because of the fact that after all, the person was like their boss or even the commanding officer being ignored. But you know, we flew. We went to the meetings and they told us what airplanes we take, and you look at your names on the thing, where you're flying to and all that. Sure, we did all that, but then there's not anything direct where we had, you know, like the coach on a basketball team, football team, would say, hey, let's go out there and all you guys, you know, by name.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't even a name over there, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Just hey you, maybe. Or he didn't even call us hey you.
Right? Go ahead.
See, and that's the only thing we had that, you know, nobody ever came up to us and told us directly that they, you know, call us anything. But when you see the actions of the boss, and somebody tells you that, then you're, you know, it makes it, you know, you have a feeling that there is something that's not right.
Mm-hmm. Was there hostility towards the Chinese in L.A. before the war?
Well, there's from time to time, you know, since, you know, there's a lot of difference between 1940 and 1980. We weren't as mobile as today because, you know, we go on a freeway, we go to the West LA, and we found, you know, this is our, like, this is your area, this is your boundary, your turf, your ghetto. You know, we usually didn't go too far. We go downtown, we go shopping, we go to shows down on Broadway and Main Street, a lot of theaters in those days. And we go to Chinatown, we go to the beach out in Santa Monica and so forth. We heard, see, being a youth at that time, we didn't have the economics, the finances to go to different places.
Mm-hmm.
We used to go swimming in a black area down 22nd and Santa Fe, be a swimming pool there. We go swimming there. A lot of blacks there mainly. And then some of the guys went to try to go to Bimini Center, which is on 3rd around 1st and Vermont area, 1st, 2nd, 3rd. These have a dance place, a dance hall there, you know, all the big bands. You go to these, have a swimming pool. Some guys want to go over there. They wouldn't let them in.
It was all for whites?
Even one white guy took from down 22nd Street. Took his two friends up there, one of them, Chinese, Japanese. They weren't allowed in. Even they told the white guy, this guy said, my friend, they're my friends. He said, nope, sorry. So,
what year was
this
that?
This was right before the war, about 19, the late 30s, right near around that time. I was probably in high school then. And then some of the people went to the ballroom out in Venice, or Ocean Park. He used to have a Trianon or something ballroom where all these big bands used to also play there. These are the two places that a lot of bands came out this way, like the Glenn Millers and the Tommy Dorseys and the all those bands used to come out here, Harry James and whatever, Benny Goodman or and other bands used to play at these two places a lot. They were given, you know, the cold shoulder as far as coming in. And so, you know, these things did exist. And like I said, from time to time, you know, even though I wasn't involved in it, but sometimes you have a Caucasian and a Chinese having an outscreen, shouting match, they would call it all you chink, and you know, and I don't know what the other thing, expletives were used, but the things were used like that. But I think more importantly is the fact that when people today say, you know, the Vietnamese, the people, they're having a lot of hostilities, you know, venting toward the Indo-Chinese coming because of this, you get all these negative things coming in. I say, you know, we should worry just as much as they, because a lot of the others, they can't tell the difference. Because, example, World War II, when Pearl Harbor was attacked, a lot of the whites drive by, they call some of us Japs. So therefore, anything that's vented upon any other Asian, Orient, I'm saying that the Asian, not, you know, because a lot of times there's others, maybe more visible, like maybe a Filipino doesn't look like a Chinese or Japanese. I'm saying that Chinese, Japanese, and the Koreans especially, they would get the brunt of it. And a lot of Indo-Chinese look, you know, they look like Chinese or whatever, but to the non-Asian, we all look alike. So it's just as, you know, the problem, you know, is something that all of us face will be the same, whether it's an Indo-Chinese or or Japanese or whatever. But I think any hostility vented toward those groups, or that group, we would be the, probably have some runoff, mm-hmm. some effect. Mm-hmm. It happened.
So in dance halls, you would experience hostility. In the
swimming pool, swimming pools. And this is
about restaurants, movie theaters.
Well, movie theaters. Most of the theaters we went to were downtown around here, and some of us went to Grauman Chinese at that time. Back when it was a big thing, you know, it was a big thing. We went in there. We went to the Pantages and the Warners and Hollywood Boulevard. We didn't receive any, but I've heard some people, you know, have had problems in restaurants. They say, well, we don't have, you know, look right after World War II. Hank Ong, we played basketball down in San Diego, our team, you know, all of us in college at that time, mm-hmm. went to play the San Diego Chinese team. Hank Ong went Henry Ong. He's mm-hmm. one of the owners of the gas station. I told you about Abraham Chin as well.
Right.
Well, Hank Ong is one of the partners too.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's been here a long time.
Uh-huh.
He's older than I am too. So he might give you a lot of insights. This was about late 40s, around 50. He was coming back from San Diego after the basketball game and stopped in Oceanside. He was stopped to have a snack. And there was somebody else with him, Hank and some other one who played basketball. So he took somebody, I went down in my car and so forth. So he said he stopped in a restaurant. This is after World War II, though. And in the restaurant, he says, there was about 10, 15, 10, whatever it was. And there was only one other customer. And he went in there, and the woman says, sorry, we're full. He says, he looked around, he said, I don't see it. I'm sorry, but we just... Then he said, and then he muttered something about, you mean this is what we were fighting for? Because he was in the service.
Mm-hmm.
So he walked out. So this is, you know, these are things which didn't happen in Los Angeles before World War II. This happened after. But I think there has been, from other people, who I see, you know, we're talking about before World War II, when I was at an age where I wasn't going out, you know, I was still in school. But I heard about people talking about they've been to restaurants where they weren't given service, or people tell them, you know, they're full, or they have read all these tables are reserved, like that. So and it's a small restaurant, you can do that. You need the business down in Oceanside.
Mm-hmm.
things like that. I think when you talk about job bias and people not being able to find a job in the city civil service, the Chinese, Asians, Japanese or Chinese who go up there with a college degree in engineering say they don't have any, you know, this is, you know, 40 years ago that there's no opening for them, but they hire others.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is, I can't attest to it, but I hear about it. I hear people talking about it, that people have a college degree and they're working in the market down the 9th Street because they can't find a job. Well, maybe the jobs were harder to find then, but still, when you get so many of the people, and some of the people were very good students, you know, some of the top in their class. But there are others found jobs. But I think, because I know some people who were graduates of engineering. The ones after World War II, that some of them began to work with the city and the water and power. And those people have been out of school, you know, many years. It wasn't until the war that things began to open up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.